DW Africa Link.
Welcome to today's program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Remember, you can always contribute by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leaving us your comment or feedback.
Coming up, hopes fade to rescue survivors from a ferry wreck that sank in Tanzania on Lake Victoria, claiming more than 135 lives.
If there are those alive, with God's help, we will rescue those who are alive. And for those who have died, it's unfortunate.
Civil society groups in Malawi hold nationwide protests calling for the resignation of President Peter Mutharika.
One of the issues that we have raised is the issue of 145 million kwacha, where the president benefited from the pioneer process. Malawians are aware.
Also on the program today is International Peace Day. We'll be hearing from you what peace means to you.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you. But first, let's hear what is happening around the world.
DW News.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. More than 100 people have been confirmed dead and scores more are feared missing after a ferry capsized in Lake Victoria in Tanzania. Rescue operations have lasted for several hours. It is uncertain how many people were on the MV Nyerere when it went under near Ukerere Island. German authorities declared an emergency as a fire near the Dutch border has raged on for nearly 3 weeks. The fire started after a military exercise in Lower Saxony. Local councillors have warned that about 1,000 residents may need to be evacuated if the fire is not brought under control soon. British Prime Minister Theresa May said talks between the European Union and her country's departure from the Union are at an impasse. She said the EU's refusal to compromise was not acceptable as the deadline to leave is just 6 months away.
As I told EU leaders, neither side should demand the unacceptable of the other. We cannot accept anything that threatens the integrity of our union, just as they cannot accept anything that threatens the integrity of theirs. We cannot accept anything that does not respect the result of the referendum, just as they cannot accept anything that is not in the interests of their citizens. Throughout this process, I have treated the EU with nothing but respect. The UK expects the same.
This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The southern African kingdom of Eswatini is going to the polls. The election in the country formerly known as Swaziland has no political parties in the race, as virtually all candidates are loyal to King Mswati III. Local authorities said the system upholds local traditions, though there was some unrest leading up to the polls. Kenyans will have to dig deeper into their pockets after Kenyan leader Uhuru Kenyatta signed Finance Bill 2018 into law. To tell us more, Andrew Wasike reports from Nairobi.
Today is the day, the tax D-Day, the day that every Kenyan has been dreading. Kenyan leader Uhuru Kenyatta signed the controversial Finance Bill 2018 into law before leaving for New York for the United Nations General Assembly. It will not only increase the tax on petroleum products by 8%, but also see Kenyans pay more for electricity, internet and mobile money transfers. It does not end there, as an anti-adulteration levy will be imposed on kerosene use, which most low-income earning Kenyans use for cooking. There is also a housing levy and excess duty fees on all bank transactions. This has increased from 10% to 20%. Kenyans have turned to social media to voice their concerns over what they call overtaxation. Kenyans are already feeling the pinch as prices of food and transport have increased gradually in the past month.
And in sports, European soccer governing body UEFA says Germany has the edge over Turkey to host the 2024 European Championships. In a 40-page report, the governing body said Germany's stadiums were already built, its transportation infrastructure was sound, and its human rights record was clean. Turkey's bid was not well received, as the bid says two stadiums would need to be rebuilt, and there were concerns about Turkey's human rights situation. The body will decide which nation will host the tournament next week. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
This is Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We apologize for the poor sound quality on our Facebook page, DW Africa, but Our technicians are working around the clock to clarify it or rectify it. Anyway, we begin the program in Tanzania, where at least 126 people have been confirmed dead after a ferry carrying hundreds of people capsized on Lake Victoria. Many are missing, and it is feared that more than 200 people in total may have drowned.
It is thought the overloaded vessel tipped over when crowds on board moved to one side as it docked. The ferry, MV Nyerere, capsized on Thursday afternoon just a few meters from the dock on Ukerewe, the lake's biggest island, which is part of Tanzania. Rescue efforts are still ongoing, as explained by Mwanza District Commissioner John Mongela.
If there are those alive, with God's help, we will rescue those who are alive. And for those who have died, it's unfortunate. For now, we are concentrating on rescue operations. Specialists have arrived. We have diverted MV Clarias from Mwanza and directed it to come here. MV Nyaungi has also been diverted to come here.
That was Mwanza District Commissioner John Mongela. To find out more about the general mood in the country, I spoke to our correspondent in Dar es Salaam, Kizito Makoye.
What I can say is that this is a terrible disaster for the nation. A lot of people have died, and the efforts to retrieve bodies are ongoing. But also, the Prime Minister of the United Republic of Tanzania has decided to postpone his official visit to the capital city of Dodoma to go to Mwanza to join other rescuers in the process of retrieving bodies and the burial process. So in short, this is a terrible disaster for the nation.
Now, Tanzania has been hit by several major ferry disasters over the years because of the state of these ferries. We understand that most of them are pretty old. What has the government been doing, you know, to see that ferries on Lake Victoria are in good condition to avoid such disasters?
The government has been trying to do here and there some modification, but I don't think they have enough resources to staff the need for every single ferry that is servicing people, not only in lakes, but also in ocean.
And we understand also that President John Magufuli has called for calm. And of course, transport has been disrupted on Lake Victoria. Do we know how people intending to travel from one island to another are doing it in the wake of this disaster?
We hear from Mwanza that it is not clear, actually, how the transportation situation is at the moment. But what I can tell you is that the security forces and the government officials are on the ground trying to retrieve the bodies from the capsized vessel.
I was speaking to our correspondent in Dar es Salaam, Kizito Makoye. Now, to neighboring Malawi, where civil society organizations today held nationwide anti-government protests calling for reforms and good governance. The organizations under the banner Human Rights Defenders Coalition want government to address the high levels of corruption and the resignation of President Peter Mutharika over corruption scandals.
Among the demands in the petition is a return of money amounting to 145 million kwacha, the equivalent of $3.9 million to government, which is believed to have been a kickback President Mutharika received from a local company after being awarded a contract to supply food rations to Malawi Police Service. From Lilongwe, Chimwemwe Padata reports.
Thousands of Malawians this Friday took to the streets in four major cities of Blantyre, Zomba, Lilongwe and Mzuzu. The protesters chanted anti-government songs, voicing their anger at the current administration. Kujotsa Apumbwaonse, a word used by the opposition United Transformation Movement, led by Vice President Saulos Chilima, dominated the messages implying the removal of the current administration. The demonstrators have given the government a 90-day ultimatum to respond to their grievances. Gift Trapensi, a human rights defender, told DW that the CSOs will not relent but ensure that issues raised in the petition are addressed.
So one of the issues that we have raised is the issue of 145 million kwacha, where the president benefited from the pioneer process. Malawians are aware that the president benefited. That's the issue that we have also raised. We have also raised the issue of ESCOM, where people have stolen 4.2 million liters of diesel. This is the diesel that was supposed to help Malawians to have electricity in this country. But if we cannot implement these demands, we are coming back into the streets, but also we are going to request Parliament to impeach the president.
However, some Malawians feel calls for resignation for the president are ill-timed.
I'm pretty sure they have their own ideas as to why they're doing that, but I have a view that this is not the right time to do that. This is a time that, you know, we are nearing elections, and I think most of the effort needs to be given to that, ensuring that people go register so that they express their own views through votes.
They're becoming masters on us. So this is very important. Just imagine, in the hospitals, there are no medicines. The police, they don't change their uniforms. They sleep in poor houses. The teachers, low salaries, and there are few teachers. Education is lowered in Malawi. Because of that, we are marching.
President Peter Mutharika, however, has been defiant in the face of mounting criticism. It still remains uncertain whether this time around the president bow down to demands of the rights defenders.
Chimwemwe Padata with that report. And now, Isaac, to another different story altogether, mm-hmm. making headlines, because today is the International Day of Peace. Mm-hmm. The theme this year is Stand Up for Human Rights, which celebrates the 70th anniversary of Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a milestone document in the history of human rights. This day, however, comes in the backdrop of rising violence in many regions of the world.
And according to the United Nations, over 68 million people were forced to flee their homes due to civil war. South Sudan had one of the leading figures of refugees at 2.3 million. And it is against that background, Zipporah, I should say this, that a panel of young people met at the University of Juba to discuss ways, you know, a way forward as the country begins implementing a new peace deal. Let's hear what peace means to them.
South Sudan has been in conflict for several years. 21 years. They did not enjoy this peace. How are they going to enjoy this peace? Through the peace agreement.
And to begin this peace, we must begin it with a smile. A smile at the face of each other. We must also begin it with forgiveness. Regardless of how much you have been offended, you have to forgive and forget. And then a new chapter will open for us. This is a very important thing. We say and we denounce violence, we denounce bloodshed, and we advocate for peace and for tranquility and for love and for unity.
I mean, those were students at the University of Juba. Strong words there, Zippy, for calling for peace, you know, denouncing violence in all its forms. South Sudan has suffered quite a lot, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's about time, as the young people are calling for peace, it's about time that they get peace. And I hope that is possible. As that man said, it starts with a smile.
Exactly. I like that it starts with a smile. I mean, not, you know, the gloomy faces that were used, you know, in terms of civil war and strife. But we have some comments. People have been reacting to this story. International Peace Day.
Yes, of course, people think it is possible and others are very skeptical. For example, Amadou Jama says the only way peace can be achieved is through tolerance and respecting fundamental human rights.
Issa Idris Jibrin says the only peace day I know is when the bombs stop.
That's a strong
short
comment.
Short and clear. As soon as the bombs stop, that's when peace, you know, that's what it means. And Samuel Opong says, Kofi, the world powers preach peace every day and do otherwise. The war in Libya, Yemen, Syria, South Sudan, and the persecution of Rohingya Muslims are all human inflicted, fueled by the armed industry in Germany, USA, Russia, and the UK. So to answer your question what peace means, I would say, let's stop hypocrisy in order to achieve fundamental human rights.
Yeah, and of course, there's someone from Cameroon who says, when we talk of freedom to live, to be protected, to move freely, I bring ourselves back to Cameroon, where he says people are running from the war zones. And he's saying, where is the freedom? He doesn't know peace, as he says.
Otabil from Ghana says, the norms of corrupt officials in government always lead to distrust. Peace will prevail if there is equal rights and justice. I love these comments. I mean, keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And we thank you for your thoughts on what peace means to you.
Thank you.
And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Zipporah Nyambura. And as usual, it's always good to have your company. You can always contribute on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We have a lot lined up for you.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing about the rise of Pentecostal churches in Nigeria and how pastors have enriched themselves at the expense of their followers.
It's dangerous because theologically everything revolves around the pastor. Then the lifestyle of the pastor becomes the standard, not that of Christ.
I'm looking forward to this report, Zippy. I mean, he's talking about the pastors, how their lifestyle, flamboyant, flashy cars, name it, jets.
Eh? You know it, Isaac. And it is growing in Africa, but unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but first, we start off in Cameroon, where campaigning for the October 7 presidential elections will be officially launched this Saturday, September 22nd, in accordance with the country's electoral law, which states that campaigns start 2 weeks before the polls.
However, there is uncertainty whether polls will take part in the restive English-speaking regions where armed separatists have vowed they will not allow foreign elections, according to them, to take place. As our DW correspondent Mok Kinzeka reports from the southwestern town of Boya, many people are already leaving the region fearing for their lives. Take a listen.
Hundreds of people are here at the Mile 17 Motor Park in the southwestern town of Boya, waiting for transport buses to leave. Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai is out, pleading with them to go back to their homes.
There are fake news that the army will attack, will launch an attack. No, the army are not launching attacks. The army are there to protect the population and their property, and the army is there to neutralize those attacks, those who are abandoning their homes. You can see here the luggages, you have beds, furnitures. No, where are they going? No, we want them to stay at home.
The governor has been visiting the park almost on a daily basis to stop the mass exodus of people from English-speaking regions. Teacher John Lum, who is living with his wife and five kids, says he does not trust the governor's assurance that their security is guaranteed.
The governor himself, who is saying that people should stay back, that they are protected, he is moving around with soldiers protecting him. Will the soldiers protect all the people? That's the reason why I cannot stay. I have to leave.
Many candidates have been visiting areas around Cameroon to encourage people to cast their votes on election day. But only Prophet Afanui from the Cameroon National Citizenship Movement Opposition Party managed to come to Motengene, a town in the troubled English-speaking areas. Outside of the restive English-speaking region and in Cameroon capital Yaoundé, I met Maurice Kamto, the presidential candidate of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement political party.
They will not win the war, so why continue fighting that war? Is it a solution for a country in crisis just to split into two parts? Just because we have maybe a government which is not listening to them? Go and vote, because it is the only solution. We don't have to sacrifice our people.
Nearly 400 people have been killed in the conflict, which broke out last year in October, when separatists of the Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions demanded autonomous rule from the government in Yaoundé. Candidate Joshua Osi tells me, as president, he would offer a better solution to the conflict.
The problem is not the secession. The problem is the marginalization and the injustice that leads to that secession. Guess what? The secession will not necessarily solve that problem. When you have the president of the republic who understands this issue, the first thing that has to happen is to solve the problem of marginalization. I have absolutely no problem that as soon as I am elected, one of the first decisions I take is to recognize that it is a political problem.
The separatists have vowed that the presidential election will not take place in the English-speaking regions they now call Ambazonia.
Moke Kinzeka reporting. And as usual, we'll keep on monitoring this story of Cameroon as it develops in 2 weeks' time. Now, Zipporah, let's talk about church matters.
These are serious matters, Isaac.
Yeah. Most of you have probably seen the sprawling galaxy of Pentecostal and evangelical churches. The rise of Pentecostal churches in Africa has posed questions on what many call prosperity gospel.
In Nigeria, these churches dot every village square, street corner, and billboards. According to DW's Fanny Fajar, the churches here are said not just to draw the faithful, but also their cash.
A typical Sunday for some 40 million Nigerians.
Testimony is sure. Celebrate Jesus. It is your day of testimony.
Welcoming teams usher people into one of the roughly 500 Pentecostal churches in the country. I'm joining a service today in one of these mega churches just outside of Lagos. It's the third biggest one in Nigeria.
This is already the third service. The church is packed. It has the capacity to seat 50,000 people.
The service starts out rather quietly, but people don't stay in their seats for long. The pastor calls himself a bishop here, and he's celebrated like a star. David Oyedepo's estimated worth is $150 million. Many of his followers yearn for that kind of wealth. Oyedepo's prosperity gospel resonates with them.
The siege of unemployment is over in your life. The siege of business, frustration, stagnation, and failure is finally over.
The big donation baskets fill quickly. The belief is the more you give during and after the church service, the more your wealth will increase. After church, there are many more ways to spend money. How about olive oil, sold for $5 per bottle? Why?
Why is not to eat is because it's a blessed oil. Like, it is not like the normal random oil we use for cooking or for anything. But once you believe and you use the oil, it will work for you. It cures sicknesses, it cures barrenness, it cures anything. People have been healed from HIV by using just this oil.
Pentecostal churches compete for members. Each promises economic salvation, a solution, and people want to believe in them, especially in times of hardship. God Jesus, that's also the first billboard you see when you enter the University of Lagos. Francis Falako is a professor of religious studies. He says Nigeria is one of the most religious countries in Africa, but he's concerned about the focus of Pentecostal churches.
It's dangerous because theologically everything revolves around the pastor. And then the tendency is to shift, you know, and focus on the pastor and then not on God, number one. Then the lifestyle of the pastor becomes the standard, not that of Christ.
He says people's faith is being exploited and converted into a commercial business with a price tag.
Most of these pastors are not there to serve. They are there to enrich themselves. Okay, and when you question some of their practices, okay, they will quote the Bible to support themselves that Jesus was not poor, Jesus had the best of this, he had the best of that.
Churches are not required to pay taxes. But with a rise in extreme poverty, some politicians want to change that. Still, it's a highly unpopular idea among those who believe positive change is only possible through their faith and not their government.
Fanny Fajar with that report on churches, you know, in Nigeria. And you've heard in that report, Zippy, that the pastor Oyedepo in the story is worth $150 million, not Naira.
He's a millionaire.
And we asked, you know, our users, if churches are the same in their countries. Flood SN kicked off with this comment. Most churches down here in Uganda make it seem like you have to pay God first for him to work for you.
That's an interesting one. And there's someone here at a Justice Prosper who says church business has taken a different turn now in many countries. In Cameroon, so many people rely on church offering to put food on their table and maybe build a new church that will also be a home for them.
And it's a mix of, you know, comments, you know, on our Facebook page. Chitanji says, why do people cry more than the bereaved? The people going to those churches are not complaining and they keep going there because they have found peace and love in some, if not majority of the cases, financial freedom.
Yeah, and John Undemba says a church is supposed to be taking care of the poor, but in Africa, it's the contrary. They don't fill the gaps of Christianity, which is the most important thing.
Chukwudi Ona says everything they do, meaning the pastors here as a poor, he says they learned it from the European missionaries. And Huntington Tendo says, we love God. If you don't read the Bible, you better do. Many thanks for those comments. You can keep the debate flowing. As usual, the platform is our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Talking Sport.
Yes, and now to sports matters. As you just heard, the UEFA Europa Football League kicked off last night with a mix of fortunes for German teams RB Leipzig, Bayer Leverkusen and Eintracht Frankfurt. To shed more light on these, I talked to Chuck Penfold from our sports desk.
Well, the highlight, I would say, from a German point of view, was Frankfurt beat Marseille 2-1 in an empty stadium. Marseille were ordered to play in an empty stadium because of some misbehavior of their fans in four games last season. Of course, they were the finalists last year. Leverkusen came back to beat Razgrad in Bulgaria 3-2. And in the battle of the two teams sponsored by Red Bull, Leipzig battled back from a 2-0 deficit against Salzburg, but Salzburg got the late winner. So Salzburg came on top in what they've been calling sort of the drink can derby.
Many soccer fans, especially in Africa, have been more interested in the UEFA Champions League. But things are changing now, and the Europa League is also becoming popular. Do you think it has come of age?
I think the Europa League is basically Champions League, since they changed the format in the early 90s from the old European Cup, which was a knockout competition, to the league format. The Champions League has just sort of taken over everything, overshadowed everything. The revenue is huge. And the Europa League, which sort of replaced the old UEFA Cup, has, it's just basically the poorer, weaker cousin. I think it's generally people whose teams are in that competition who are more interested. People who don't have a horse in that race, so to say, aren't so interested. It's all Champions League.
After the European Championship, the German teams will be back in the Bundesliga. What should we expect this weekend?
Yeah, I guess there's a few interesting games, as there usually are. Frankfurt-Leipzig on Sunday will be an interesting one. Two teams that are not too far away from each other, sort of mid-table. I think the big one, though, that people will be looking for is the late Saturday game, which has Schalke facing the almighty Bayern. Schalke, who finished second last year, have had a terrible start. They don't have a win in three games. So there's been some talk the coach's job could be on the line, so people will be watching that one very closely. And then the other team that's had a terrible start are Leverkusen. Normally they would have been at least challenging for a Champions League place. They haven't got a single point. Their coach is under pressure, and they play Mainz, who a lot of people had expected to be a relegation candidate this year, but they've had a pretty good start. They're all the way up in sixth.
Let's talk about the latest news today, because the European Football Governing Body, UEFA, has just released an evaluation report putting Germany ahead of Turkey to host the Euro 2024. Why exactly did they reach that decision?
In terms of Turkey, concerns about human rights were highlighted in this report, as well as the economy, because the Turkish economy is in trouble, the lira is in trouble, and their plan is to make massive investment in infrastructure and also rebuild, I think, two of the stadiums they're planning to use, and another one fairly major renovation. So UEFA is concerned that because of the economic situation, they may not be able to meet these commitments.
That is Chuck Penfold from our sports desk.
Now, after weeks of debate, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has signed in a new tax bill. It contains the controversial fuel tax, which after pressure was cut from 16% to 8%. But it also contains tax hikes for electricity, internet and mobile money. Kenyans, however, say they feel already the pinch, and we ask them what they think. Some comments here, Zipora.
Yeah, of course, people are not happy about it. Shadrick Sakalika is saying these are signs of poor leadership and lack of vision and poor policies, and they want to milk the poor people and getting the rich on expense of the poor. So basically not happy.
I was surprised that immediately after signing it, he hopped onto the plane and off to the New York UN General Assembly. I mean, he was scared of the backlash or such comments
for
like
sure.
We are receiving on a Facebook page. Membosua says the only economics African leaders know is to increase taxes. It's unfortunate they don't know fighting corruption and eliminating wasteful spending are also part of the economics. A strong one there. I like that one.
Yeah, but people are actually divided. And Isaac Godwin saying Kenya is trying to reduce dependency on foreign aid and on borrowing, but at the expense of her people's own pockets.
And he continues to say, I feel for them, but it's a good idea only if everyone is employed. Many thanks for your company. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.